When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So, Steven at SandCloud got a serious business card, the Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.
Kempire is brought to you by Philly. The Kempire After Dark live experience is coming to you first on July 10th. Yeah, that's the same day that Real Housewives of Orange County is premiering, but our show will be better. I guarantee it. It's a night of hot topics, comedy, and so much more with special guest Alexander Rogers. We spilling tea as well. And don't forget, if you are in Atlanta, I'll be there on August 5th. Then we'll be in D.C. on August 22nd. Then back here in New York City on September 12th. All shows have meet and greets available, so get those if you don't already. If you want a picture with me or Kiki with me. And don't forget, the New York City show has a live stream option exclusively. And what I say in Washington, D.C., Philly, or Atlanta will not be the same thing that I mentioned in New York City. And don't forget, you have access to that live stream link for at least a week. Be sure to check out the description for more details on how you can be a part of the Kempire After Dark, the Villain Era live summer tour. You're listening to Kempire here on the Kempire Radio Network. Writer and director Tyler Perry is being sued by a former actor of one of his hit shows, The Oval, accusing Tyler Perry of S.A. So as you know, Tyler Perry has been doing press for his new hit movie, Straw, starring Taraji P. Henson. So the timing of this lawsuit, a lot of people are calling out. Well, one of his former actors are calling him out in a $260 million lawsuit. TMZ has the report stating this. It said Tyler Perry is facing an accusation of sexual assault, a claim coming from an actor on his long-running TV show, The Oval, and one Tyler Perry's camp calls a scam. Derek Dixon filed a lawsuit against Tyler Perry, and in the docs, he claims that he and the director met at an event back in 2019. In Derek's words, Tyler picked him out of the crowd and asked him for his phone number, suggesting that he might have a role for him. As it turns out, he did. Derek says that Tyler gave him a small role in two episodes of a show called Ruthless. Then, in January of 2020, Derek says that Tyler invited him to his Atlanta home and he accepted, hoping to build a friendship that would lead to more acting gigs. But according to the suit, while there, Derek drank too much and ended up sleeping in a guest bedroom. In the court docs obtained by TMZ, Derek claims that Tyler got in bed with him and started touching his thighs. And although he rejected the advances that night, he claims Tyler remained interested. Shortly thereafter, Derek says that he landed the role of Dale in The Oval, great for his career, but he claims it was around this time that Tyler also started firing off sexually suggestive text messages, including asking what Drew's sexual preferences were, and telling him that he has sex with men. It should be noted, Tyler Perry at this particular point has never come out as homosexual. There have been a lot of rumors about him possibly being homosexual, but Tyler has never confirmed. I don't even think he's even denied it either. Derek also notes his character Dale was written as gay, homeless, and desperate store clerk who had to sleep with other characters for a place to stay. He claims that's exactly what Tyler told him he was looking for in a real-life sexual partner, someone who would be loyal and dependent upon Tyler. Derek says that he feared his career would be derailed if he flatly rejected Tyler, so instead he told him that he just wasn't the sexual type. But he was always terrified he'd lose his job if he complained of sexual harassment. To that point, he says that Tyler once again invited him to Atlanta later in 2020, and things allegedly took a dark turn. Derek claims that Perry greeted him warmly, but quickly started a sexually charged conversation, like asking him if he likes it rough in bed, and then grabbed Derek by the throat while saying, "Look how excited you just got." He says that he pushed Tyler away and that was the end of the alleged incident. The lawsuit includes years of text messages allegedly sent by between both men. Here's the thing. I did start to read through the text messages. I just thought to myself, I literally could go in my phone right now and change one of my contacts to Tyler Perry. However, when you file a lawsuit and then there's discovery, they can verify whether or not these text messages were between Derek and Tyler. Just want to point that out. But I just said, we ourselves as laymen cannot confirm or deny whether these text messages are real. Only an expert. And the only reason why I mentioned that is because we literally are talking about that in the Diddy trial, where they had forensic specialists come in and confirm deleted text messages, and they confirmed that they came from the known parties. The text messages, I mean, we can go through them if you guys want to. However, let me continue in regards to what is discovered, the main points that are coming out from this lawsuit and from the text messages. So to that point, he says that Tyler once again invited him to Atlanta in late 2020, and things allegedly took a dark turn. Derek claims that Perry greeted him warmly, but quickly started a sexually charged conversation, like asking him if he likes it rough in bed, then grabbed Derek by the throat while saying, "Look how excited you got." He says that he pushed Tyler away, and that was the end of the alleged incident. The lawsuit includes years of text messages allegedly sent by between both men. Most of the ones Tyler allegedly sent are sexually charged. For instance, one reads, "No straight man would be going on walks with you or cooking dinner for you unless they wanted to F you. I would F you." And here's the thing, and this is, we've talked about this a lot here on the channel in regards to entertainment and how the lines of professionalism are so blurred, but they cannot be blurred, because we have to remember, this is allegedly Tyler talking to an employee, a subordinate. Again, we have not verified whether or not these text messages are even real. We can't even go by that. And you can edit text messages now too. That's the crazy thing. They said the most aggressive incident allegedly went down in June of 2021, again at Tyler's Atlanta home. Dixon was staying in the guest house and wearing only his underwear when he says that Tyler came in to give him a goodnight hug. Wait a minute. I mean, I get it, because we've talked about this before when, you know, women are in these positions. But now we have another instance where you're staying at Tyler's home. And you've already turned him down and he's made multiple advances. And I also will see in the comment section, people will have a different response versus a man versus a woman. But he says the most aggressive incident allegedly went down in June of 2021. Remember, he talked about two other instances that were in 2019 and 2020. So he says that the most aggressive incident allegedly went down in June of 2021, again at Tyler's Atlanta home. Dixon was staying in the guest house and wearing only his underwear. I will say this, in defense of Dixon, we will also remember that Tyler, although he has a studio now, but remember, there were times where Tyler would use his homes, and I'm sure he probably still does, uses certain parts of his homes to still film things. So it could be that maybe that was part of it. Trying to give some context here. So Dixon was staying in the guest house and wearing only his underwear when he says Tyler came in to give him a goodnight hug. He alleges that Tyler yanked down his underwear, groped his butt, and said, "Relax and just let it happen," and assured him it wasn't going to hurt. Dixon says that he managed to rebuff the advance by changing the subject. According to the suit, Dixon finally filed a complaint with the Equal Employment and Opportunity Commission in June of 2024. So that's a year ago. And then quit the Oval, saying that he could no longer put up with the alleged sexual harassment. So these are important details, because I know, again, people are going to say, oh, you know, Tyler has the number one movie out. He's reaching. Again, on either side of this, because again, we don't have all the evidence. This hasn't gone to trial. I don't know if it will go to trial. But I'm trying to give each person benefit of the doubt here. But if he filed this a year ago, he's talking about June of 2024 with the Equal Employment and Opportunity Commission. Could it be that he has tried to sue or has been in conversation with Tyler Perry in regards to some sort of settlement and maybe someone advised him to take this route in regards to you should file a complaint with the EEO, EEOC. And then this will set you up for filing a lawsuit later. I don't know, because there are some people that are that calculated, but it is important to note the dates. So he filed this a year ago. He filed this complaint with the EEOC back in June of 2024. And then he quit the Oval, saying that he could no longer put up with the alleged sexual harassment. So Dixon is suing Tyler and Tyler Perry Studios for quid pro quo and workplace sexual harassment and sexual assault and battery. And he's seeking $260 million in damages. Tyler's attorney, Matthew Boyd, tells TMZ, this is an individual who got close to Tyler Perry for what now appears to be nothing more than setting up a scam. But Tyler will not be shaken down, and we are confident that these fabricated claims of harassment will fail. Again, this is just a short statement. I'm sure they will present a longer statement to the courts or through their attorneys in regards to this, but that doesn't deny that these text messages are not real. Okay. That opens up a whole other can of worms in regards to what people have thought of Tyler Perry over the years. You also remember a lot of people were trying to associate what Christian Keys, when he came out with his allegations, not against Tyler Perry, he never named the person. He just gave insinuations that people assumed it could be this one or that one. And Tyler Perry's name was out there. Since then, we haven't heard a peep from Christian Keys when it comes to that situation. Guys, as always, do you think that it's a coincidence that this lawsuit is coming out when Tyler Perry is doing press and has the number one movie on Netflix right now? Or could this be legitimate and Tyler Perry's secrets are catching up with him? It's day 25 of the Sean Diddy Combs trial, and it looks like Christina Curram, Diddy's chief of staff, will not be taking the stand because the prosecution is set to rest their case this week. We've got you updated in regards to today's testimony and more context when it comes to the Sean Diddy Combs trial. Let's get into our coverage exclusively here on the Kempire channel of day 25 of the Diddy trial. So let's get into day 25 of the Sean Diddy Combs trial. Diddy has faced a lot of issues this week in regards to jurors. Juror number 6 has been dismissed yesterday, and we did a separate reading of the 14-page letter. I'm sending you a 14-page letter from the defense outlining all the reasons why that they should keep juror number 6. And a lot of what they said in it, I said, okay, some of this is valid, but are they setting us up for a mistrial or for the appeal? Well, in that 14-page letter, they did ask for a mistrial based off this information. But that's not the only juror with issues that we reported to yesterday. There were another issue in regards to another juror on this case. We'll get into that in just a second. Just a little update from our friends over at NBC News. They said U.S. Attorney's Office Special Agent Delisa Penland is set to continue her testimony today. While she did not work directly on the case, Penland was tasked with reviewing the Combs investigation charts and data. Brendan Paul, you remember Brendan Paul? A lot of people have been wondering whatever happened to, a lot of people were referring to him at the time, drug mule that was arrested the day of the Homeland Security raids. And he was subsequently released because they had discovered drugs on him at the time. So Brendan Paul, one of Combs' former personal assistants and two summary witnesses, are also expected to testify. So this is why they're saying possibly the prosecution could rest their case tomorrow, the latest Friday. So here's the thing. When Judge Aaron Subramanian left the bench yesterday afternoon, the fate of another juror who might have spoken improperly about the case with a former colleague remained unresolved. Earlier yesterday, the court said a second juror might have acted improperly and that his fate would be decided after testimony. But when Subramanian sent jurors home, this issue wasn't addressed yesterday. Subramanian had dismissed a juror earlier in the day for giving conflicting answers about where he lives. That juror, a 41-year-old black man, might live in New Jersey and outside the bounds of the Southern District of New York. That juror has since been dismissed. Again, the 14 pages, they had some valid reasons, but at the end of the day, I think the bigger concern here is that his answers were very inconsistent. Based on what we heard and reported in regards to what he reported back to the judge and to the court and to people in charge of jury selection, it just didn't make sense. And it's like, are you lying? There's a small group of people that believe that he was planted by Diddy. All of that aside, all the conspiracy theories aside, his responses were inconsistent. And I think even in Diddy's best interest is to not have someone on here that doesn't seem to be able to tell the truth or be clear or concise, or as the judge said, follow directions. Okay, so here's a recap of what happened yesterday. Said yesterday in court, Anya Sankar, a paralegal for the U.S. Attorney's Office, reviewed the case's text and call logs. Text showed that Combs' employees joked about how the music mogul hired male S workers for drug-fueled, quote, freak-offs. Combs also asked employees to pick up illegal drugs, such as 15 pills of Molly, the text showed. The DeLisa Penland, U.S. Attorney Office Special Agent, spoke about the Combs investigation charts and the data she reviewed. Penland reviewed flight records belonging to Jules Theodore, an S worker frequently hired to engage in freak-offs with Combs and Cassie Ventura. Questioning over the flight and hotel arrangements appeared to support the transportation to engage in prostitution, I'm just going to say it, charges Combs is facing. And this is something that we didn't talk about yesterday. I think we briefly alluded to that there was evidence that was shared with the jury, but not to the public. That's because what was shared with the jury yesterday were, quote, freak-off tapes. They said yesterday jurors were shown videos of freak-offs mentioned in testimony for the first time. The videos, which involves Combs, his former girlfriend, Cassie Ventura, and S workers at a New York City hotel, were from 2012 and 2014 and were shown in short clips. Some jurors reacted visibly to the graphic tapes. One person reacted in like shock in what they were seeing, and another person giggled. I don't know why they giggled, but they giggled. The video was shown only to jurors and not to the gallery or the media, rightfully so, because why would we need to see any of those things? At the end of the day, this is for the jury. And we told you this from the beginning of this trial. The judge has said he does not want to turn this trial into a spectacle or gossipy. So the court's in session. They said the court opened this morning with Subramanian asking the prosecution and defense about an online article that appeared to include details from a sealed proceeding. So that is a main concern today, that something that was supposed to be under seal is now in the media. And the fact that the judge, because remember the judge at the very top of this warned Mark Garagos that he had said something in one of the podcasts that he was doing, and he had said, you now have a new listener. So he doesn't want, again, for this to turn into some sort of spectacle or gossipy. But this is a major concern that something that's under seal has now been leaked to the press. So Romania was livid and asked both sides if they knew the article's source. He said, someone is lying. The transcript was sealed. Who does it benefit? I don't know. I haven't found the article that he's referring to. However, I would have to review it in order to see exactly who would benefit from revealing this to the media. However, some people are saying that Diddy is doing things from behind the scenes as well. We reported to you a couple of weeks ago that there are people outside being paid allegedly to wear free Diddy merch. $20 an hour. Allegedly. So he says, someone is lying. The transcript was sealed. One or more people who were here Friday in this courtroom flagrantly violated this court's orders. A violation of the court's sealing order. But it wasn't just that, he said. The court imposed a gag order on the government, the defendant, all attorneys for the defense, and anyone involved was made accountable. And he continued, violation of the order, what happened here, may result in a civil and criminal contempt charges for all involved. The judge warned AUSA attorney Maureen Comey and led defense counsel Mark Agnifilo, there is no passing the buck anymore. The buck stops with you. If anything happens, lead counsel is responsible. And here's the thing, too. When we reviewed the 14 pages that the defense sent to the court over the weekend, they have accused the prosecution of leaking materials to the press. So, again, I'm not saying anyone is particularly innocent here because the defense has been accused and now the prosecution has been accused as well in the past. I don't know if recently. But the judge is like, one of you guys did it. So who did it? Again, I don't know which article he's referring to. However, I do find it to be interesting. I would have to review it. Like I said, I would have to review it in order to determine whether or not it benefits Sean Diddy Combs or it does it benefit the prosecution. So the prosecutors could rest their case tomorrow. Assistant U.S. Attorney Maureen Comey revealed the government will likely rest its case against Combs tomorrow, but it could go into Friday morning. I will highlight the fact that Kirsten Brown, who we've had here on the channel, who's a Los Angeles prosecutor, will be here on the channel this week. I have a lot of questions for her in regards to this case, so stay tuned for that. Comey's attorney, Mark Agnifilo, said that the defense would present its case in 2 to 5 days of trial, but the timing is not set in stone. A jury charge could come next week, Judge Subramanian said. So here's the thing in regards to, I'm really interested to see who exactly Diddy will call to the stand. Will we see anyone famous, anyone notable that will be called to the stand? Why not? We were just talking, I believe we were talking about this with Kirsten in regards to how when Rihanna showed up during A$AP Rocky's case, it was towards the end. And that was to help influence, I'm sure, the case on some level. Like, this is my wife. She's a notable person. I wouldn't be surprised that Diddy, being the narcissist that he is, I wouldn't be surprised that he is going to call someone that is a big name. As you already know, Kanye West has already showed up to the court for like 30 minutes and then ended up leaving because he couldn't make it into the main court. But yesterday, defense attorney Alexandra Shapiro asked the judge what he told the other jurors about why juror number 6 was suddenly gone and off the panel. The judge said that the other jurors were told that juror number 6 was excused. They were also told not to discuss the case or the issue amongst themselves. Okay. The issue with juror number 7 will be dealt with after court today. Brendan Paul pleads the fifth and receives immunity, according to NBC News. Brendan Paul, who worked for Combs, took the stand to invoke his Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination before taking the stand later today. He was granted an immunity order, which requires him to tell the truth to protect himself from prosecution. If he doesn't tell the truth, he will perjure himself and he could face charges for that. So he's not immune to perjury charges. And again, Brendan Paul is the assistant that was arrested the day of the home raids because he had drugs on him. They arrested him. I believe he was with Diddy when Diddy was at the airport because Diddy was stopped at a Florida airport. He wasn't at his home at the time. We don't know where exactly he was going and don't know if he was trying to escape somewhere. Remember, we also know that his private jet that wasn't at this airport landed, was it? I forgot where it landed, somewhere in the Caribbean, but no one was on board. Oh, so why did it go there? But okay. Delisa Penlin, a special agent with the U.S. Attorney's Office, has returned to the witness stand this morning. Penlin did not work on Combs' investigation, as we've reported to you before, but reviewed evidence in the case that she testified about yesterday. She went into travel records for Combs, Cassie Ventura, and at least one S-worker the former couple frequently employed. And that is what a lot of people are saying in regards to the transportation for S-workers. I'm changing the words here. A lot of people are saying that they probably could. If we're looking at all the charges that Diddy is facing, they probably could definitely get him on that particular charge. Not probably. It looks like they could. But again, this will be all determined by the jurors. This testimony appears to bolster the government's case for Transportation to engage in S work charges levied against Combs. An S worker round-trip travel from Los Angeles to New York in August of 2009 appears to have been paid by Combs, according to Penland's testimony. Prosecutor Emily Johnson had Penland testify to records showing that Jules Theodore's travel, who was the S worker, including flights and hotel, paid for by an American Express card. Penland testified that it was Combs' credit card, and those charges were included in his September 2009 card payment. Ventura previously testified that Theodore was an S worker she and Combs often employed to have sex with during freak-offs early in their relationship. According to receipts shown through Special Agent Penland's hotel chart,
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Ever get the feeling you're being watched online? It's data brokers. They collect your personal info, your browsing habits, where you live, and who you're related to, and then sell it to the highest bidder. Aura helps stop that. Aura automatically removes your personal info from data broker sites and keeps it off. It also monitors the dark web, protects your devices, alerts you to real-time threats, and more. Start your free trial at aura.com/listen. That's aura.com/listen for your free trial.
Charges Combs businesses thousands of dollars for damage to their rooms after his traveling party checked out. The Beverly Hills Hotel billed Combs $500 for damage to drapes and carpets, and the Hermitage Hotel $950 for a deep cleaning. But the most eye-popping big-ticket bill shown today came from the Intercontinental Hotel, which charged Combs $46,786 for penthouse damage October 5th, 2012. Why don't you just do this stuff in your own home? That way you're not paying all... Like, I don't... get it. Maybe he didn't want it to, maybe because his family and things like that were coming through the home. So maybe that's why, because I'm just like, why wouldn't you just, or at least buy a pied-à-terre and have that as for your freak off place? You were at one particular point, a billionaire. I don't understand why you had to take all these things to hotels. But again, maybe he didn't want the S workers knowing where he lived. Okay. But all this money that you're paying, and for me, it's the exposure of you're going here, you're going there. And like, you saw what happened at the Intercontinental Hotel. Okay. A panicked Combs called and texted Ventura to come back in the wake of his videotape beating of her at the Los Angeles Hotel in 2016. Phone records admitted into evidence show. Combs told Ventura that officers were on their way to arrest him, though that was not the case, as no one called the police to the Intercontinental Hotel on March 5th, 9 years ago. I'm about to get arrested, he texted Ventura before calling her five times in 22 minutes with no answers. Combs' attorney, Tenney Garagos, took up cross-examination of Penland, who reviewed evidence presented in charts by the government. The defense nitpicked at different parts of the evidence charts, noting that some sections were lacking. Some dates of hotel meetings between Combs and S workers didn't have Ventura's name listed. Garagos pointed out as one potential inaccuracy. Penland testified that there were many times when another person was present, but did not have evidence to put their name in the chart. Penland said that they did not have the names of every potential person at gatherings. So there could have been more people other than just S workers, possibly? In an ongoing bid to prove Combs' freak-offs were consensual acts, the defense read through texts that show that the music mogul and then-girlfriend Cassie Ventura routinely exchanging dates for their next rendezvous. It can be any date you choose, Combs text on August 5th of 2009. In one text, Ventura responded that a Friday date would work best for her so that she could have the rest of the weekend to physically recover ahead of the next work week. But Ventura added that if they couldn't make their schedules work for the weekend of August 7th to the 9th, she wouldn't be free again until August 28th. The defense showed a text from Ventura to Combs on August 7th when she appears to tell him she's looking forward to performing oral sex on him. Garagos would continue to point out loving texts between Combs and Ventura that were missing in the prosecution's chart, but the special agent on the witness stand resisted. The defense continued to review texts from Ventura that appeared to be loving or encouraging of freak-offs, noting their absence from the government's evidence presentation. Penland told the court that her job was not to add anything to the government's presentation, but to review what was included. The chart was based on evidence showing who was at specific gatherings and locations, she said. Garagos then pointed to a date on which the chart doesn't show Combs' name to indicate he was present at a specific gathering. Jurors are wearing headphones and watching a video that was likely explicit footage, similar to what they were shown on Monday afternoon. While both sound and actual footage were blocked from the courtroom audience's view, some sound from the headphones placed on the table could be picked up by the microphones. The sound appeared to be of excited communications rather than routine conversation. Just a reminder, guys, don't forget to like this video. It's an easy and free way of supporting the channel, but not just like the video. If you enjoy this content or you appreciate these summaries, please share them with your family and friends. That's the way that we continue to grow the channel. I know we have 500,000 followers here, but you do realize that there are billions of people here on YouTube and on other platforms. So be sure to share our content as well. And don't forget, the Kempire After Dark, The Villain Era live show is coming to Philadelphia on July 10th. Then we will be in Atlanta on August 5th. Then we're in DC on August 22nd. And then back here in New York City on September 12th. A night of hot topics where we might talk about the diddler, or you might hear tea spilled in regards to the diddler or other celebrities that has happened, right, Los Angeles? And we'll be talking about some of your favorite reality TV shows as well. Meet and greets are available for all the shows, but the New York City show has a special live stream option for those that can't come to any of the cities that we're coming to, or you may not be in town, or you just want to have a week to be able to watch the show at your own leisure. Anyway, more information on the tickets will be available in the description. Get your tickets today. Let's get back into today's testimony. Sidebar, before we get into today's testimony, because I did want to point out, I mentioned this yesterday in regards to 50 Cent crashing out on social media, crashing out for lack of a better term. Here's the thing. I also saw that 50 Cent's first baby's mother, the woman that's the mother of his first child that he doesn't have a relationship with anymore, meaning the son, I saw that she claims that he was physically abusive to her as well.
At this point, he's a famous rapper. G-Unit is clicking. He's a sex symbol in a sense because he's in great shape. Why wouldn't you want to be with somebody at that point in his career?
Because he was abusive. Well, he still is abusive. I mean, it's not in his presence, but he's abusive. Emotionally, physically, he's abusive. And last straw for me was he hit me in front of my daughter. And I said, as a mother, if I allow her to see him hit me and stay with him, what example am I setting for my daughter? And that was it for me. It was that and another incident with Marquise. So it was two incidents, but it was kind of close. And there was another incident when Marquise.
So for those that keep trying, they're all on the bandwagon of 50 Cent and 50 Cent's documentary on Diddy. Based on what we're hearing about 50 Cent, allegedly from his exes, he's just as bad as Diddy. So he's not completely innocent. And Netflix, we're looking at, you're collaborating with him on a documentary about Diddy's dirty deeds. What about his alleged dirty deeds? This is not going to be the best person to be collaborating with on a Diddy documentary. She said a lot in the live that she did, talking about 50 Cent and the way that he's been acting lately, his relationship with other women and things like that. The reason why I haven't really talked about it at length, and I don't want to share the videos of what she's saying, because again, it's identifying an alleged victim that's in this case that's still supposed to be anonymous. But like I've said before, at this particular point, it's so obvious because so many people are talking about it. Like, we're not talking about someone that is an alleged victim, of abuse. Moving on from there, before we continue and get into the rest of today's testimony, there was a video that I saw yesterday with Sunny Hostin. She is a former prosecutor. She's a host of The View. She's also hosting a new Diddy series on Hulu. So she was on The View podcast, and she has gone to the court and seen how some of this has played out. And I really do enjoy a lot of different lawyers' perspectives on covering this case. And you will see it will run the gambit when it comes to the difference of opinion on how this case is going. But I will say, this trial's been going on for 6 weeks now. I found her perspective to be interesting. Take a listen to what Sunny Hostin has to say when it comes to now her thoughts on whether or not the prosecution or the defense could be winning here.
But I've been in the courtroom. One of the, I think, was a game changer that just happened is that they replaced one of the jurors
right.
with an alternate.
Because he had a shady address history? Is
yes.
that what it is?
You know,
explain what happened.
This is a federal case, and it's in the Southern District of New York, so you
right.
have to live in New York. This guy was, he said he lived in the Bronx, and the prosecution found out and the government found out, and I think the defense also found out he was actually living in New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
So this is, that's disqualifying.
Sure.
And so
could that be a mistrial too, or no?
It's not a mistrial basis, I don't think, but the defense certainly tried to keep him. He was a black guy from the Bronx.
Mm-hmm. The defense, as you already know, has tried 3 times. This was the 3rd time that they tried to move for a mistrial in the Sean Diddy Combs trial.
I've been watching him. He is not buying what the prosecution is selling.
Oh, really?
And so the defense really wanted to keep him.
Right.
He was a fan of.
So that might be part of the reason why, because you saw the 14 pages that they filed over the weekend. They had their reactions, and being in the court, people are noticing the jurors' reactions. And we've told you about the one juror, which was a woman, where they said that she doesn't have a poker face. You know, Mona Abdi, a journalist that's been in the court, said that this woman does not have a poker face. When Jane was testifying, she was like rolling her eyes back. And yeah.
90s hip hop, you know,
well,
knew
who
about
it. Let's be clear.
Who isn't?
If that's a reason to get thrown off a jury.
So they're saying that he was also a fan of 90s hip hop. If you're a fan of 90s hip hop, then there's no way that you couldn't have known who Sean Diddy Combs is or was. Or what wasn't a fan of him, even if you weren't a fan of his music directly, music that he produced. He produced a lot of our era's music at the time.
Never served.
Exactly, yeah. Same. But it's a significant loss, I think, to the defense in terms of the diversity of the jury. There's still 8 men and 4 women, but now he was replaced by an older white man in his late 50s who is an architect from Westchester.
No, and probably so not the profile of the defense, what they wanted.
That's a yeah. very different dynamic. And they made a pretty good argument saying that, you know, that Sean Combs deserves diversity in the jury, a jury of his peers, mm-hmm. and that the prosecution has sort of systematically removed a lot of the black jurors.
And we read through this yesterday. Again, if you missed yesterday's video, because I'm sure not all of our Diddy trial videos are being played for you. There's also a Diddy trial playlist that we've put together as well. That's available here on YouTube for those that are listening on the podcast. We went through all of what the defense outlined in regards to the jury selection process and how the prosecution got rid of a lot of the diverse jurors.
I did see that myself. Most, if not all, of their challenges were for black jurors. So that may be an issue on appeal.
Now, as a prosecutor,
yeah.
is that something you would try to do as well?
I didn't do that. I didn't need to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
I won all my cases anyway. But I will tell you, it's been really fascinating to watch because I think these cases are won or lost during jury selection. I always say that.
Right.
And so they
and
had
the
a
jury's
pretty,
changing.
The
yeah.
jury's changing,
mm-hmm.
you know, and so not a lot of people are talking about that, but it's really juicy because there's also one woman in the front. She's got big silver hoops. And every time she hears that someone got money, someone who was testifying got money, mm-hmm. whether it be $30,000 or $30 million, she's had enough.
You see the hoops moving.
The hoop.
Because I wonder if that's the same juror that doesn't have a poker face.
Sir, flying. She's just looking around. She's, and so she's going to be a problem for the prosecution.
Wow. All right. Well, so at this point, who do you think is putting on the better case? Who do you think is winning right now, defense and prosecution?
I've got to tell you, I think the defense is really great. You've got Mark Agnifilo, whose wife is representing Luigi. Mm-hmm. You've got Tenny Garagos, Mark Garagos's daughter. Mm-hmm. It's just, although you on the other side, you have James Comey's daughter, Maureen okay. Comey, the lead prosecutor. But the defense, you know.
A lot of Nepo lawyers.
Yeah, but they're.
I thought that was funny. He said that. Yeah, but you. But at the end of the day, yeah, you could be a Nepo lawyer or a Nepo baby, as they're coining it. But you have to go to school in order to become an attorney. And you also have to actually be able to be a good attorney in order to win this case. So if they end up either side winning the case, then you're like, well, it looks like you're living up to the legacy of your parents.
Very good. They're all very good. Yeah. And what I will say is, you know, what people don't realize is the prosecution has to prove its case to 12 people beyond a reasonable right. doubt. The defense only needs one juror to think, I don't know. I don't know if I believe that one witness. I don't know. That person got $30 million. You know, I don't find her credible. And the defense wins. And the defense has poked a lot of holes in this case.
Now, I know the big question is about separating the bad behavior, general bad behavior from trafficking.
Character. Yeah, his character.
But is there, I don't know this because I haven't been paying that close attention, but is there a version of this where he's not found guilty of trafficking but still goes to jail?
Yes, there is a version of it that he's not found guilty of, let's say, racketeering.
Okay.
But he goes to jail on the Mann Act, which is like transporting people, underage people, or the sex trafficking, for transporting people for the purposes of sex.
Yep.
So I will say there is a version that he gets convicted, but if I'm doubting it, I would imagine that a layperson is doubting some of this.
All right. And of course,
this is coming from a former prosecutor. And this is why I look forward to hearing part two or doing this conversation with Kirsten Brown, because remember, we did that a couple of weeks ago, and that was early on in the case. And I said, and she said, it's still too early to decide whether or not the prosecution has proven their case. But if the prosecution is resting their case this week, I can't say 100% that I feel like they did what they were supposed to do in regards to proving all of the charges. There is a lot that's been proven. But again, I might shift depending on hearing what Kirsten might say in regards to, well, don't forget about this. And don't forget, this is a certain particular part that they have to prove. Remember, with the RICO, they don't have to prove all of the stipulation statutes under RICO. They just have to prove two. And again, we have to keep in mind, no matter how we feel about based off all the information that we've gotten over the last 6 weeks, this is all going to be dependent on the guidelines that the jury has to follow. And I remember it was a focus group, and I'm guessing maybe they were using this focus group in preparation for a trial. The focus group, we had to pretend as if we were a jury. And I remember the guidelines that they gave us in order to determine our verdict. I was like, this is hard because it has to be based off of those guidelines. You cannot veer from those guidelines. Because that will be the determination on whether or not this person is guilty. So that will be interesting. I'm going to ask Kirsten more about that. And if you're a member of the channel, I've posted on the community tab, members, you had exclusive access to ask your questions in regards to Kirsten Brown coming back here on the channel this week.
Pled not guilty to all charges and denied all sexual assault allegations.
Yes. Yes.
Now, you can hear more about this with Sunny.
Yes.
On this trial in general and the new Hulu docuseries, Diddy on Trial, As It Happened.
Yes.
It's streaming every Sunday on Hulu and Hulu
at
on Disney Plus. Throughout the trial, 8 p.m., and it's a big hit. People love it.
Yeah, when it first came out, it was number 3, then it went to number 1. So I'm very...
Congratulations to Sunny Hostin. I really loved her perspective. I saw that yesterday, and I wanted to include it for today's conversation. Speaking of journalists and people that we love that are covering this case, I wanted to play a video from our friends over at Mona Abdi on TikTok. We've played her videos before here on the channel. I want to play her other video here, what she had to say in regards to the juror. So take a listen to this.
A big blow to Diddy's defense team today. Juror number 6, a 41-year-old Black Hispanic man from the Bronx, is out, replaced by a 57-year-old white man from Westchester County in a trial that Diddy's defense team told the court is an attempt to take down a successful Black man. And Diddy's defense team fought hard to keep him, filing a 14-page letter calling the move discriminatory. In it, writing that during the jury selection process, the prosecution used 7 out of their 9 strikes on Black jurors. But now we've learned that another juror is facing questions about conversations he may have had with a colleague about the trial. Now, that juror was questioned on Friday, and he turned his cell phone over to the judge. This, as the government called their first witness of the week, a special agent who testified about texts, hotel records, and flights booked by Diddy's team for hotel nights, freak offs, or Wild King nights, further establishing how this alleged criminal enterprise operated. In one example, records showed an escort, Jules Theodore, flying out for a freak off with Cassie, and another text from Diddy asking for 15 pills of Molly. The text also showed that Diddy's staff used to set up hotels with soup, Gatorade, baby oil, extra towels, and they would also text each other to give each other the heads up that he was having a Wild King night. One name that came up a lot was Christina Quorum, Diddy's chief of staff, who the prosecution is saying was his right-hand man and an unindicted co-conspirator.
So I wanted to highlight that particular part when she said an unindicted co-conspirator. So at this particular point, I don't think she's facing charges, but also at this particular point, and then this will be a question that I asked Kirsten this week. Could she face charges in the future? Because they're saying right now she's not indicted, but they are calling her a co-conspirator. You see what happened to Ghislaine Maxwell. She's now in jail. I don't remember the timeline on when she was charged, but she was charged and now is sitting in jail.
The prosecution says that they're expected to wrap up their case by Wednesday at the latest Friday. So it looks like Christina will not be testifying.
So Christina Curran will not be testifying based off the timeline of things. Let's get back into today's events here in court. Again, shout out to our friends over at NBC News. So they said that the Combs-Ventura relationship could be a roller coaster of emotion at any given moment. A high point was on June 16th of 2023 when Ventura texted her then boyfriend calling him an extraordinary man and saying that she couldn't wait until we have a baby of our own to celebrate Father's Day. They said the defense hopes to show that Ventura didn't object to her role in Combs' freak-offs and was an enthusiastic participant. His attorney, Tenny Garagos, introduced one text chat in which Ventura wrote, laughing out loud, sure, when asked by Combs to meet him for an October 31st, Halloween, 2013 rendezvous at a Mondrian hotel. Ventura previously testified to doing the freak-offs to keep Combs happy. The former girlfriend once proposed she and Combs cosplay as a hotel bar pickup and one-night stand, according to a text chat between them. She told Combs to meet her at the Hermitage Hotel bar where I am not Cassie and you are not Sean. If he needed to break character, the safe word would be pineapple, Ventura wrote. Ventura had previously testified to participating in this act as a last-ditch effort to save their relationship. For those that follow us for our Real Housewives coverage, that reminds me of regular Robin. Sorry, had to. Robin Dixon and Juan Dixon doing this on and look, in some relationships will say, yeah, we've done that too. What does this prove? What the defense is trying to prove is that Cassie was a consensual adult participating in these freak-offs. That's what they're trying to paint the picture here. Ventura and Combs have considered doing a freak-off on March 4th of 2016, one day before his infamous videotaped beating of her at a Los Angeles hotel. This is one day before. According to reports, they were saying literally she was leaving a freak-off the day that she was harmed. They ended up not doing it that day, according to a text chat, because of errands Ventura had to run. Because I believe she was also supposed to be in a movie at the time, and literally, if you look at the red carpet pictures of her, I don't know if you could tell from the red carpet because she had to cover up her bruises and marks from that beating that we all saw on the red carpet for that movie premiere. That beating played a pivotal role in Combs' downfall. The jury and the general public have been dismissed for the day as the parties remain to discuss issues in private with Judge Subramanian. Before the public cleared the court, the prosecution said that they're not likely to rest their case before Friday. Prosecutor Maureen Comey noted that Penland's testimony took longer than expected, and Brendan Paul has yet to be called to the stand. Earlier in the day, he did obtain obtain his immunity from the prosecution, because he's probably going to testify to transporting drugs, being the drug mule that people have alleged that he was. There have been, despite a lot of conspiracy theories that are around Sean Diddy Combs, there have been a lot of conspiracy theories confirmed during this trial as well, and some debunked as well. I'll definitely say that. So that is a shorter recap of today's events in court when it comes to the Sean Diddy Combs trial. However, that's partly because Brendan Paul has not taken the stand. Tomorrow, when he does take the stand, we will dive into the transcript from our friends over at Inner City Press. We'll give in regards to his question and answering tomorrow. But as always, guys, if you haven't already, be sure to like the video. It's an easy and free way of supporting not just my channel, but other channels as well that are covering the Sean Diddy Combs trial. Also, don't forget that we are doing our Pride Month fundraiser, Happy Pride. We're trying to get to our goal of $3,000. My real goal is $5,000, but $3,000, we only have 2 weeks left. 2 weeks left. So if you haven't already, please donate or share this video or any of our videos so that someone can donate today. 100% of your donation goes to the center organization. Thank you again for those that have donated or will donate. Thank you to everyone that's liked the video already. Thank you to everyone that's listening to the podcast version of this. If you haven't subscribed to the podcast, be sure to subscribe today and be sure to check out some of the other Diddy trial updates that we've given you in our Diddy trial playlist. Thank you again for being here. Thank you to our Kings Guards. Thank you to our channel members. Thank you to our subscribers. And those of you that just watch these updates, but you're not subscribed yet. I don't know why, but that's on you. You're missing out. You don't even realize that you're missing out on additional videos or when we go live covering this case and more here on the Kempire channel. As always, again, thank you all for being here and for watching. And more importantly, to our podcast fam for listening. Thanks for tuning in to Kempire here on the Kempire Radio Network. As always, you can hear Kempire on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. More information can be found on KempireRadio.com.
Everything from clothing to household items are getting more expensive each day. American Giant is about keeping things simple and close to home. They aren't affected by tariffs because their products never leave the U.S. Support American-made tariff-free clothing with American Giant with American Giant. Get 20% off your first order when you use promo code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off when you use code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com.
Craftsman Days are here at Lowe's with big savings on the tools you need. Right now, get a free select tool when you buy the Craftsman V20 2-Pack Battery Kit. Whether it's the backyard, the bathroom, or beyond, Craftsman has the tools to help you power through and get the project done right. Because DIYing is unpredictable, but your tools shouldn't be. Shop Craftsman at Lowe's today. Valid through 7-9 while supplies last. Selection varies by location. Maximum initial battery voltage measured without a workload is 20 volts. Nominal voltage is 18.